More than half of bachelor's degree holders are underemployed a year after graduation, and roughly 4 in 10 are still underemployed a full decade later. How worried should we be about those rates, and what can colleges and universities do to decrease them? Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Key, Inside Higher Ed's News and Analysis Podcast. I'm Doug Letterman, editor and co-founder of Inside Higher Ed, and host of The Key. I hope you're having a great day. As questions about affordability and value in higher education have proliferated, college leaders have focused their attention on the high proportion of their students who are employed or in graduate school after college. But in what sorts of jobs? That question is really at the heart of the report this spring from Strata Education Foundation and the Burning Glass Institute. And the data are concerning. The report, Talent Disrupted, follows up on a related report from several years ago and reinforces work that the Federal Reserve Bank of New York has been doing for some time. The issue only popped onto my radar screen fairly recently, but I think it adds some important nuance to the larger discussion about post-college outcomes for graduates. In this episode, we dig into the report with two experts. Carlos Salerno is a managing director at the Burning Glass Institute and an author of the aforementioned report. Gary Danes is founder and principal of Back Porch Consulting and a former professor and senior administrator at several private nonprofit colleges. In the conversation that follows, they join me in discussing what underemployment means and how serious a problem it is, the conditions that contribute to it, and what colleges and universities can do to shield their graduates from it. Before we begin, here's a word from Strata, the sponsor of this and the next two episodes of The Key.
This episode is sponsored by Strata Education Foundation. Learn more about the State Opportunity Index, which gives states a set of priority measures and action steps that support a stronger connection between education and opportunity. The first ever State Opportunity Index report measures how states are doing in 5 priority areas: clear outcomes, quality coaching, affordability, work-based learning, and employer alignment. Visit strataeducation.org/opportunity-index.
Now on to today's discussion with Carlo Salerno and Gary Danes.
Carlo and Gary, welcome to The Key, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Carlo, can you start by giving the audience a kind of high-level overview of Talent Disrupted?
What we were trying to accomplish here was to sort of build on a report that had been done back in 2017, looking at this idea of underemployment. This notion that some folks go to college and then they find work in areas where they don't end up needing the degree that they have. Part of this project was the ability to update and expand, take advantage of some better data, take advantage of some more rigorous methodology, but really lay a landscape out and try and understand bigger questions like to what extent underemployment is a thing, and where is it happening the most, and what kinds of levers do institutions, for example, have at their disposal to prevent it or to buttress against it. So what we were really looking to do was build a larger, broader analysis about a topic that we think is probably as important as access and completion are today when you think about the college landscape.
I assume that one of the changes from 5 or 7 years ago is the sort of greater availability of data. We have seen, I don't think we're all the way there yet, but we have certainly seen more states do it, and we've started seeing obviously some more activity at the federal level. Feel like we have a sufficient data now to start really answering important questions like these? Or where are we on that arc?
Well, I think we'll never have sufficient data for anything that we ever want to answer, but we definitely do have better data today than we had a dozen years ago. We have more data, and I think there's a generic culture now that, you know, there's a generic culture in education in general that we really want to measure as much as we can, and being able to drill down and get nuanced here has value. And so we can really actually talk more granularly about things like where people went to school and the background characteristics of some of those individuals, or even some of the other programs that, you know, certain institutions may even offer, and figure out if those things actually are drivers of underemployment.
Gary, you published a LinkedIn post a few days after the report came out that sort of had some analysis of the Burning Glass Institute and Strata report. Can you share a little bit about what you said in that and where it has left you thinking about this underemployment topic?
So I came to know about this report in the way that I think a lot of folks did, through media coverage of it. And so I was looking at a Bloomberg article, for instance, that was headlined, "Half of College Graduates Are Working High School Level Jobs." So I thought, you know, I work in higher ed, I better read the report, because this is, you know, especially in the conversation about the value of a college degree, this is a really important piece of information that we better understand. So I went and read the report, and I encourage everybody to read it and read all 50 pages, look at the appendices. It's a super rich report. And one of the things that I found is that I think this report and colleges and universities tend to talk past each other when they're talking about employment outcomes. So a lot of small colleges, which is where I tend to work, they use NACE's First Destination Survey to measure graduate employment, and that doesn't ask this set of questions at nearly the level of sophistication, right, about alignment between degree and line of work or sector in which you're working and job qualification. We ask 6 months out, are you employed full-time or in graduate school? Are you employed in a field that's related to your discipline? If yes, we say, good, we did something important. So I think that's one thing, we talk past each other. And I think second, the use of the word underemployment, which is used in a technical sense in the report, well-defined and clearly defined, is different than the way that campuses talk about it, right? A student might think, I'm underemployed if I got a job that doesn't use all my skills, but they might think, I'm fully employed if my degree helped me get this job, even if it's a position that doesn't require a college degree, using the analysis that Burning Glass used. So that just got me thinking then, you know, how is it that colleges and universities can take this report, translate it into their own language, and do a better job then of serving students, both in helping them think about what work should be like for them and helping them find jobs that meet their employment goals, whether that's by discipline, by compensation, or by sort of quality of life.
Carla, we'd come back to you. How does underemployment fit into the traditional ways we've thought about the job that colleges are doing, preparing graduates for what comes after college? Do they have a job? Obviously, we've been focusing for a long time on things like student debt and that are more on the sort of cost side, but that are obviously related. What's your thinking about sort of why underemployment is important to look at and how it enriches or complicates in good ways in terms of sophistication the underlying conversation?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Doug. That's a really complicated question as well. But
yeah, sure. I asked about, there were about seven clauses to it. I do
yes.
A lot.
But I'm old enough to have worked in this space long enough to remember when higher education was focused on the access agenda and how that gradually pivoted over time into a completion agenda. And honestly, underemployment to me is sort of that third leg of the education to workforce stool, which is, you know, we can get people into school and we can get them through a degree program, but what does it say when we can't get them into jobs afterwards? I think it's an important policy question we should be asking ourselves. You know, why are people getting college degrees but not working in jobs that require college education? That's a big policy question we should be asking. Some of that I think we can talk, or some of that we can explain by environmental factors, right? Like students make choices about what degrees they want to pursue. Sometimes those degree programs may not be in high demand where they live. Sometimes people are willing to move. Sometimes people are unable to move. Those kinds of factors can shape people's ability to get jobs. But we also know that institutions have levers that they can pull as well to, even if they can't stave off underemployment, they can help protect against it and shield against it, right? Like we know, for example, from the report that programs that are far more math intensive tend to be really great shields against underemployment, for example. Internship opportunities, practical applications to work, tend to be logical, great shields against underemployment as well. I think all of this really comes back to, though, there is a big policy question that higher ed has not answered. And I think it's not because it's been negligent, but because they have been focused on access and completion that we just haven't gotten to the stage yet to start thinking about, well, how do we take that training that we're really trying to get so many people to have and make sure that it is being practically applied.
Tell us just a little bit more about how you've defined underemployment in here and why it's an important issue to explore.
What we're looking at is folks who have bachelor's degrees, and that's important because what we're really focused on here is the market for bachelor's degree recipients. And we're asking the question, are these individuals working in jobs where the preponderance of people who are working in the same job have a bachelor's degree or not? A good stylized, if not typical, mythical example is your Starbucks barista, right? We don't expect that more than 50% of coffee baristas have bachelor's degrees, right? It's not the kind of job we feel is college necessary. And so if you were to find yourself with a bachelor's degree working as a barista, we would ostensibly say that you're underemployed. You have a degree and you're working in a job that you don't need the degree for. I think that's a good stylized way to describe what underemployment is here. Our approach is very similar and aligned to what the Federal Reserve and what other folks who try to measure underemployment capture. We actually were very careful about making sure that our results aligned and were robust to other techniques. We focus on a very specific cohort of students where we look at 10-year measures. We're looking specifically at folks who graduated college in 2012. And so we're looking at a very unique cohort of individuals. They had just left school right after the Great Recession. You know, there's a lot of context that can help explain why or why not they may be underemployed.
Gary, do you think unemployment is a big issue for higher education? And if so, how big a problem is it?
So I would say, yes, it is a big issue, whether you take the definition that the Burning Glass report uses or a broader, more common sense definition, in that lots of people feel like their college education hasn't prepared them well for the work that they are in. And so colleges have an obligation to get better at that. This report lands at a time when both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party are focusing more on employment outcomes and compensation as a measure of employment outcomes as one of the most important components of higher education. And so in that context, this report ought to open the eyes of colleges and universities and really generate a richer discussion about how employment outcomes fit into the overall work of their institution itself. Disciplines ought to be asking that same question about themselves. So, for instance, public safety is a field where there's a high level of underemployment because you could become a police officer without getting a degree, or you could get a Bachelor of Science in Criminal Justice. So I would hope that faculty, I would hope that institutions that have that program, and I would hope professional organizations are asking these questions. What does it mean to be well employed for somebody who's earning a degree in this field? And what can we do as an institution to help make sure that our graduates meet our definition of what it means to be well employed?
Carlin and I have probably talked about this a bunch over the years about sort of the extent to which career outcomes ought to be a central, the dominant, the exclusive way of judging the value of the time somebody has spent at a college or university. My view is that it's an important one. I think it is ideally not the sole one, but that it's, you know, one of a mix. But within, to the extent that it is an important one, the hope, I think, is that we get more sophisticated and richer definitions of what it means to be successful. We've seen, I think, overemphasis in certain ways on that salary number and things like that. So that's to me what's most important and interesting and useful about the underemployment data is enriching the set of measures we might use to gauge how well colleges are doing. Carla, does that square with kind of how you think about it?
It does. And one other thing that I think is important to this part of the conversation is we ask universities to innovate and we ask universities to design programs that are responsive to labor market needs. And sometimes they have to do that with an idea where from the standpoint of having to guess demand, and they have to estimate demand, and they have to predict the extent to which degrees, new programs may have value. So on the one hand, we want universities to provide credentials that are valuable in the workforce. At the same time, we also expect universities to update and modify credentials to continue to be responsive. And sometimes they can't always do that with a 100% guarantee that the new credential that they're building is going to have value. I think it's partly an iterative process. And so we ask them to do something that potentially puts them in a position that could look like they're failing, when in fact, what they're really trying to do is innovate.
To build off of what Carlos said, it's also the case that most colleges and universities don't have a well-thought-through approach to work, right? That is, you don't take a course in general education that's about the philosophy of work or how you find meaning in work, with the exception of, say, work colleges or institutions that come out of a religious tradition that has a way of thinking about what work should mean in the lives of people. Most schools don't have that. And so they're not preparing students to think well, to plan within their own expectations for what work looks like, to think within their disciplines necessarily, in order to ultimately be able to get the sort of job that aligns with who they are. And so I think some of the underemployment data is an indication that schools have failed to do enough work on the basic topic of what work is. How do you make a meaningful life out of your work? And therefore, how do you choose disciplines, jobs that align with those sorts of things?
This episode is sponsored by Strata Education Foundation. Learn more about the State Opportunity Index, which gives states a set of priority measures and action steps that support a stronger connection between education and opportunity. The first ever State Opportunity Index report measures how states are doing in five priority areas: clear outcomes, quality coaching, affordability, work-based learning, and employer alignment. Visit strataeducation.org/opportunity-index.
Carlo, I think the report avoided oversimplistic thumbs up or thumbs down, this is too high, or how do you think about the results you found and what they say, and is the goal ideally seeing those figures drive down over time?
That's a good question, Doug. The truth of the matter is we don't know what a, quote, good underemployment rate looks like. This is not like a natural rate of unemployment, for example, where we can say there's some magic number we should be striving towards that gets us, that there's always going to be some level of underemployment in the marketplace. Sure, there will be. That said, I mean, when you see numbers showing 52% of bachelor's degree recipients are underemployed within a year after leaving school, I mean, one out of two instinctively feels high. I mean, that feels like an excessive amount of underemployment. And I think even worse than that, when you track out 10 years and you still see more than 40%, these numbers feel like they should be able to be driven down. I think these numbers are high by almost every standard. We just don't know what's propping them up at this point to build the levers to get them down, I think.
I've probably always been somebody who is concerned about overemphasis on really short-term indicators. And so I actually found the 10-year-out numbers probably more concerning than the near-term one, and the connection that your report found between those and the extent to which you start, those who start off that way are sort of much likelier to stay in that position.
Just to note that right at the end of the report, where there are the tables about institution type, Pell eligibility, selectivity, I think that should open people's eyes, right? Institutions that have a high proportion of Pell eligible students tend to also have a higher proportion of underemployed students, or higher than you might expect. That matters, right? And it may have all sorts of explanations, right? Maybe where the institution is or the disciplines that are offered there, a set of constraints under which a low-income student makes decisions about work. But nonetheless, those are significant findings for an industry that is doing its best to try to provide access to better economic futures for the people who participate in it.
The one thing I would add to what Gary said, right, is that when we look at that number overall, I mean, it's high, but, you know, if you break it down by academic field, and you can see that, you know, grads who do STEM work, right, get fields, STEM-related fields, they tend to have lower underemployment rates. One of the more interesting findings in the report was that within business fields, right, like we think of business as one blob of degree programs, but in fact, there's a whole bunch of subfields, right? The more math-intensive degree programs, accounting, actuary sciences, finance, you know, underemployment is lower than in marketing and HR, for example. And so, again, I think we know that there's nuance below the surface here, right? And we know that the kind of degree you choose plays a role in the extent to which you're probably going to be underemployed later. You know, there are choices that people are making here, and there are institutions choosing to emphasize investment in these programs. So, yeah, I don't want to say there's blame or opportunity to go around, but it's definitely both sides of the coin that are shaping the outcome here. It's not just institutions. Right. It's definitely not just individual students' choices.
What's the responsibility, if any, of employers in this set of questions around underemployment? We've seen employers, a lot of employers, criticized for not giving enough paid internships and other things like that. But is there anything, message, takeaway for employers here, Carla?
Look, I think the challenge that employers face is a unique one here. Suppose I graduate, I have a degree, I have my bachelor's degree. For some reason or another, I find myself underemployed in that first year out. Maybe I'm 2 years out and I'm still underemployed. Well, now for me to break into my field, right, employers are going to be looking at me, and they're also going to be looking at me relative to a whole bunch of other graduates who just graduated. They have the same training I do. They have the same skills I do. They may be able to hire them more cheaply because they're fresh out of school and I'm 2 years out. At the same time, I'm compressed on the other side because there's a bunch of people who have 3 years or 4 years of experience in that workforce and the same credential as me. And so I think what happens is underemployed grads get squeezed the longer they are in the job market because there is a pool of people who have degrees similar to them, and some of them can be more cheaply hired because they have less experience, and some of them have more valuable skills because they've already been in the workforce for a while, and I'm left at the bottom of that barrel. And so it really creates this sort of quicksand effect that puts employers in a position that makes it really hard for them to choose me.
Gary, did you want to add something here?
To add to what Carlos said, I was a provost at a small institution in eastern North Carolina, which is an economically depressed part of the state. We were involved in economic development work, but there was often a mismatch between the sorts of jobs that would come to the area for economic development and the graduates that we produce. So we wanted our students to be employed. Many of them wanted to stay in the region, so they would select jobs that were relatively well compensated because they were in advanced manufacturing, but which were sort of underemployment sorts of jobs, because of that particular labor market and the sorts of partnerships that we are trying to build. So I think you're right, Doug, that there are opportunities for employers, for people doing economic development, partnership building, to think more wisely about this set of questions.
Carlo, most institutions probably wouldn't necessarily have underemployment data for their own graduates, right? So, like, what's your set of thoughts about what, pick your job title, a vice president for student success or a provost or a president or anybody else in that large group of people who might feel responsible for ensuring the post-college success of their graduates? What should they be thinking about from this? What should they be doing?
Well, when you're ready to have a two-hour podcast on career services, I will happily join that episode as well. Yeah. No, listen, I think there are some things that came from this report that we know, again, can really help institutions shield their graduates from the risks of underemployment, right? One of those is internships, right? One of the more profound findings we had in the study showed that, like, the likelihood of being underemployed drops almost by half if you have an internship. And that makes sense because internships do an excellent job of aligning work while you're in college and training to the opportunity that you could potentially have later, right? It builds relationships, it builds work culture, it gives people a better understanding of how the training that they're getting applies in the working world that they're going to use it in afterwards. All that makes good sense. We know majors matter. We know that math-intensive degrees, again, tend to be great shields against underemployment. But realistically, if I'm one of those enrollment management folks, or if I'm one of those student affairs folks looking to design success, I'm thinking about building transparency. I want to build better informed students and better informed consumers. I want students to understand the job opportunities in their local region, right? I want them to pick majors that have great earnings and great employment outcomes, but I want them to be aware that they have, to be aware that those options exist, right? A lot of times students, especially your traditional 18 to 22 year old students, they don't fully understand what a good wage is in a good field, and they don't understand what good employment opportunities may look like. And so being able to educate students and their parents, right, families, about the kinds of opportunities that are available with different programs, I think that's the first step in making sure that people make good choices about degree programs. Universities can facilitate that education. Colleges are great at delivering high quality education experiences. I think where they can protect against underemployment the best is in making sure the students who come to their school are choosing degree programs that are going to provide them value afterwards.
Gary, as somebody who works with colleges, what would your recommendations be in terms of how institutional leaders and everybody in the education process should be thinking about how to underemployment-proof their graduates to the extent possible?
Yeah, it's a great question. Certainly, schools need to be more serious on the institutional research side in taking up these questions and learning the language that's being used in policy circles about employment and underemployment. We need to get much better at just seeing where our graduates go and staying in touch with them so we can answer the question, where do your graduates work, right? That seems to be a low-level sort of thing.
And beyond that, you know, 98% of graduates are employed thing, right? This report sort of renders those data, if not meaningless, much less meaningful.
I would absolutely agree. And the other thing that we do often is highlight one or two students who got the sort of job that seems to be an inspiring sort of job. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, you want your current students to see possibilities in the future, but that's not sufficient. Carlos' point about internships and the report's point about career services are essential, though, you know, they're not going to fix it in and of themselves. There are some schools, as I mentioned earlier, getting much more serious about work. There's a sort of resurgence in interest in work colleges, and obligatory internships and co-ops are coming back. I suspect that we'll see innovation at those sorts of schools that's going to guide other sorts of institutions. And then the last thing I would say, I said a couple times earlier, the school should know what its expectations are for student work and help point them in that direction, whether that's a vocational sort of thing or a line of work or compensation. You need an approach in order to do something meaningful in this area.
Carla? Just to tack on to what Gary said, I mean, look, at the end of the day, there is a perception about college value problem right now that the national media is rightfully obsessed with. And I think one way that you can address the "is college valuable, is college still valuable" discussion is to drive down cost and make it more affordable for the return. The other side of that coin is to make sure that the payoff of that college experience is worth it. And so underemployment is a fine example of a topic where universities and colleges and policymakers have a better sense now of levers that they can pull that can boost what we'll call college-level employment, reduce underemployment. But the idea, right, is that as you drive underemployment down and more students find themselves in work that is aligned with their education, my hunch or sense would be that you would expect perceptions about the value of college to go up as well. And that's a discussion that, you know, as we continue to ask ourselves, you know, why do people go to college today? What do they get out of it? We can look at the solutions from two sides. We spend a lot of time talking about costs. We don't spend a lot of time talking about what people can do to really boost the value of the degrees in the workplace afterwards.
That's it for today's important discussion with Carlos Salerno of the Burning Glass Institute and Gary Danes of Back Porch Consulting. Thanks to them both for their time and insight.
I think college leaders should be paying much more attention to the issue of underemployment. To my mind, it's a significant contributor to the questions Americans seem to be asking in increasing numbers about the value of getting a degree, alongside worries about rising tuitions and student debt. Underemployment isn't entirely an institution's control. Students' own choices and local and regional economic trends obviously play a significant role. But at a time when many people in higher education feel besieged and wonder what they can do to try and change public perception, this is an area colleges can actually do something about by talking to their students about the importance of vocation, offering them a set of educational experiences that will better prepare them for good jobs after college, and ensuring that career guidance occurs throughout their time at the institution. A lot of this work is already underway on a lot of campuses, but the underemployment data are evidence of how far we have to go and hopefully a prod to redouble institutions' efforts. As our guests suggested today, helping more of their graduates find fulfilling work may be one of the most important things colleges can do right now to change public attitudes about their value. That's all for today's episode. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Doug Letterman, and until next time, stay well and stay safe.